that message from Wally yesterday?
Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, July 29th, 2021. It is 9 a.m. and the Board of County Commissioners is meeting in the BCC Conference Room for our County Administration Workshop. Present are Commissioner Beartrager, Commissioner Fowler, and Commissioner DeYoung. So first item of business is Department of Business is A, Information Technology. On board, we have John McCaffrey, our IT Director. And the subject matter is broadband contract with HR Green.
Good morning, sirs.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So a couple weeks ago, I met with the board. The board decided to end the RFQ without award and to see what the next options were. I met with my counterpart in Jackson County, who thought it made sense to cooperate regionally on this broadband search, and moved it up to county management in Jackson County, and they supported it as well. I talked to the engineer from HR Green, along with Commissioner Fowler, and I'm sorry, with Wally Hicks, legal counsel, and asked some questions about the very simple contract that you have in front of you. It's a two-pager. There is also a personal service agreement that's been okayed by legals. And basically what they're offering to do for the price of $20,000 is to have a couple of meetings with the Board of Commissioners to lay out what a broadband project actually is and to get your feedback on what you envision for the county and how that would work. To do a market assessment about what fiber looks like in Josephine County, what are the carrier hotels, the middle miles, the backbone connections, and what will make sense going forward, whether we use fiber or wireless or all the options that are available in getting internet connectivity to rural Oregon. And they will create a community broadband vision from your feedback about what you see. What does the county own? What does it lease? Does it just give money to broadband providers and incentivize them to build middle mile? What do you want for the county as far as broadband? It is a very small contract. It'll take 6 to 8 weeks to do. And it's pretty specific on getting this done, manage the project, and get out. And then we decide whether we like this company. It was one of the three companies that replied to the RFQ, although the subcommittee of the CDEC said that the responses were not on target. They did prefer HR Green over the other two. And when I went to the CDEC last week, they are endorsing that we sign this contract in order to get the ball rolling, see what this contractor looks like, how we work with them, see if they can deliver on a promise, small promise.
So they're just, this is just preliminary stuff. Does HR Green, do they actually contract to install? Would they be an installer or would they just be like a...
They're more engineers and planners than they are installers.
They're like an architect.
They're directing traffic.
They're also working with Coos Curry Electrical Co-op for similar work.
I wish that we had Coos Curry Electrical Co-op here.
Like I said, they were, or like John said, they were the preferred one out of the three that responded to RFQ. It's a way to keep the ball moving quicker and to join with Josephine or Jackson County. We think we'll both get a better product because they'll be in the neighborhood and they're down in Curry. And it's a company that's only less than a couple years old. And so we think they're hungry and they're looking for a place to make a mark and have a track record on top of what they've already done. And that this little Southwest Oregon might be a good spot for them. And it's only the commitment for the first scoping so that we're not committed to them all the way along, but it'll be good information if we chose another person to be our planner and implementer.
Well, I think timing is, I think we really need to push on this because, you know, they may have a dozen of these proposals out there. And then we say, yeah, we're ready to go. And they go, no, we've already committed to two other places. So.
Right. That's a possibility for sure.
I don't have any problem with it. I will at some point in time, I'm going to want to sit down with you and I need you to back way back and speak really, really elementary English to me as to exactly what we're talking about.
Well, I think they're going to tell us our options. That's what they're
saying. But I mean, they can speak options all day long, but I can do that underneath the hood of your car or your car, and you won't, and I can have you lost in 30 seconds.
Not me.
Talking about lobe separation and cam lift and so on. But that's the part I don't understand. I don't get the big picture as to what broadband really is. Is it by phone? Is it by my computer? Is it an antenna that sits up in the corner of my kitchen?
Kind of all of that.
Could be.
So I need to know what that looks like.
I think you'll be much more educated after they come to town and work.
Okay, let's do it that way then.
They're going to help us both get off of square one.
Yeah.
Okay.
See what our options are. Perfect.
So we'll move this to WBS.
We could. It's $20,000. It's well within your purview. Yeah. The board could recommend that the board chair sign the deal after Wally makes the changes to make it appropriate to Josephine County.
Do I have a motion to that effect?
Yeah. Do we even need a motion for that? It's under $20,000.
It's under $20,000.
Yeah.
We don't, but I think we have consensus. Yeah.
Thank you very much, commissioners.
Thank you so much, John, for pursuing that. This is a big deal. Like you just said, getting off of square one before all the other counties.
Yeah, because they're all going to be jumping on, you know, with this big infrastructure and broadband money coming down from on high.
And we get them committed to Southwest Oregon. Right. It could be a gem for them and us.
This could be a Park Place Boardwalk thing.
I like that. Little Monopoly reference.
Come on up.
You're up to bat.
Brad Kane, Juvenile Justice Deputy Director, is here for item number B. B1 is State of Oregon Intergovernment Agreement for Behavioral Rehabilitation Services. So let's start with that one.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. This is basically housekeeping. We already have a contract in place. This is a renewal of our behavioral rehabilitative services. Basically, OIA rents space in our residential center that we have going already, the Turning Point. And so this is just a renewal and mirrors the last contract. And we're just, basically the ask is that Director Goodwin would be able to sign this IGA and get it moving forward. Right. It's already been in effect since July 1. It came to us extremely late, so we're just trying to.
And this is for $602,000. Not to
combined
exceed,
or?
Not to exceed $602,000. Did I get that right?
I believe so. They rent three beds from us at about $182 a night, and so I'm not exactly sure what that breaks down to.
That's about the same as the state prison system.
Yeah. So not to exceed amount.
The requirement is probably the same.
Well,
almost
it is.
Almost the same. I mean, you have to have the same amount of people on board.
Basically, the intent of it is to keep people out of the OIA close custody and get the youth back into the community, kind of a step down from the prison system, if you will.
Is this just for local youth, or is this going to be?
It's for state.
State.
All state youth. But we do concentrate on Southern Oregon first.
A miniature McLaren?
Well, yeah. It keeps them, you know, from behind Walmart. It'll keep them out of there. It's kind of a step down from that. They can come from there or from McLaren to our residential center. And then we provide a lot of services, individual counseling, cognitive restructuring. It's a level 4 treatment center that we have.
But they're still in detention.
They are not.
They are not.
No, this is a step down. So this keeps them in the community. It isn't locked. They can run it anytime.
And if they do, then they go.
Then they, yeah, that's a
they talk about going
parole violation type thing. So
the amount on the second one is 364.
This is a kind of another chance type thing.
Well, and it's a reward for showing some improvement, I imagine.
It's a step down, correct. Yeah. They do what treatment in the facility, then they step down to us, where if you want to, a halfway house. And then they transition into us, trying to get on the terms there. And then they transition into a back to home, foster home, or whatever. So it's kind of a step down.
Okay.
Is what it's considered.
And this is just
a step up in trust.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Okay. Exactly.
All right.
Then we want to give authority to Jim to sign this as the director?
Yes.
That would be the ask, yes,
we'll
sir.
Do that.
Well, then I'll make a motion to approve both IGAs and authorize Director Goodwin signing authority for those two.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any further discussion?
No.
No.
Seeing none, please call the roll.
Commissioner Fowler?
Yes.
Commissioner Beartiger?
Yes.
Commissioner DeYoung?
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. You want to just give us a quick description of item number two, State of Oregon Intergovernmental Agreement for Juvenile
yes.
Crime Prevention Basic Services and Diversion. We've approved signing authority for both of these, but
okay.
just for the record, if you give us a little.
The basic and diversion is monies we get that are administered through Oregon Youth Authority, their state monies. That is $364,000 for the biennium. Basic goes toward our detention center, which we could have taken money from the levy. We already had this in place, so we were trying to allow as much as we were trying to be frugal
right.
with what we had, and we knew the sheriff obviously takes the lion's share of the levy monies. So we had this in place, we just kept it in place so we didn't have to take more levy money than we needed to.
Right.
And so that's the basic part of it. Diversion is basically we fund a high-risk youth sex offender probation officer with those funds. And they deal with the highest risk youth and provide treatment and services and monitoring in the community, basically,
okay, gotcha.
For that. And it's split about 50-50 on that.
So the cutoff age for the youth we're dealing with is still 25 years?
That's for OIA. The highest we go is 23.
23.
Yes. Okay. But we never see that. I've been here 24 years. 21's the highest, and that's kids that come in from other counties that are mandated to be on till they're 21's the highest I've ever seen.
I think that's one of the problems as we consider kids 25 years old still kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a societal problem. No.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And other states are actually, well, I shouldn't talk probably, but other states are raising the age of juveniles, which is why we're getting more out-of-state kids when they transfer in. They're coming in at 18, 19 into our system.
As juveniles.
Yes.
And they're not juveniles, but legally they're considered juveniles until.
Because they were convicted as a juvenile. So if they commit a crime over 18, then they're adult, but they can commit a crime at 17 and stay with us until they're 23.
Wow.
And stay with the state until they're 25.
Big problem.
Yeah. So.
You can't buy cigarettes till you're 21.
I can't vote till you're 18, but.
Yeah, they want to lower that to 16.
Yeah. Not so sure I'm ready.
Can't drink, but us. Send you to Vietnam, yep. Take away your birthday.
Can't smoke cigarettes. Nope.
Or a rock or whatever.
The military.
All right, don't ruin my day, Commissioner.
Yes.
Not this early. Come on.
I didn't mean to stir the pot here. So
that's working around that. Okay.
Very good. Right. Thank you,
sir. Exactly. Appreciate it. You guys keep up the good work over
Thank
there.
Thank you.
On, yep. Good to see you.
It's a lot of work right now with staffing and COVID stuff. It's
here we go.
We're going to see how that works out, okay? Thank you.
Great, wonderful.
Okay, item C, Parks. Sarah, is she?
There she is.
Hey, there she is. Parks, item number C. So we have with us Sarah Garceau via Zoom, our Parks Director, and C1 is Land and Water Conservation Fund Grant Agreement, number 41-01613 for White Horse Park renovation. Phase one with Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Sarah, what you got going, kid?
So this grant is the Land and Water Conservation Fund grant that Josephine County Parks applied for with the 2018 cycle for Land and Water Conservation Funds. Because this is a federal grant and we have to go through National Park Service in order to get all the checks and balances of a project, we're finally at the notice to proceed stage of the White Horse project. And so this agreement would allow us to accept the $305,000 in grant funding to apply to the remodel for White Horse Park.
Okay.
Okay.
Any questions from the commissioner?
If once we get this grant, when are we going to, what's the timeline for starting this project?
Well, sooner than later would be great, but where we are at right now is our pre-application through planning returned that we need to apply for a Goal 3 exception in order to do full sewer hookup sites at White Horse. The reason for this is when planning had to apply land use to different locations in the 1980s, Whitehorse, as well as many of my other already developed parks, somehow received exclusive farm labeling. And because none of the current parks master plans were accepted into what we call the comprehensive master plan, we now have to go through a Goal 3 exception. So I'm working with legal not only to go through the Goal 3 exception, but also to question, how do I get my master plans, which were approved by the Parks Advisory Board, which were approved by commissioners, to now be adopted by the comprehensive master plan? And they are also, I've asked them to review, how do I get out of exclusive farm on my parks, which should have never been labeled exclusive farm after they were already developed? And for this one, for instance, it's had full hookup sites since 1956.
Well, I think the reason, Sarah, is that parks and dry camping is you can use exclusive farmland for that, and now we're going to hookups, and that puts us out of it.
There's already hookups at Whitehorse, and there have been since 1956.
Yeah, but they didn't tell anybody.
But yeah, no.
Actually, when we acquired it in 1958, it was the first park with public trailer hookups all the way from Sacramento to Portland. We were the hotspot on the I-5.
Wow.
So we're going through the hoops there.
Gosh, what a historian. On top of everything else, she's a historian.
Well, okay, let's, I guess, we'll just send this through, I guess, to the WBS.
We need to be able to vote on it.
We'll just move it to the WBS and vote on it in public, take public comment, okay?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay, item two is County Opportunity Grant Agreement Number COG21-002 for Indian Mary Park ADA Needs Project with Oregon Parks and Rec Department. That's pretty self-explanatory, I think.
It is. I did a presentation a few months ago when we were applying for the grant, because I had to do a resolution in order to apply, and that's where we explained the ADA upgrades occurring. We did receive the grant. They're paying for 50% of the upgrades to the tune of about $57,000, 50% from them, and then we'll match that as well.
Does this satisfy all the ADA requirements needed down there at Indian Mary, or is this only taking care of the restrooms or taking care of the approach to the river, or does it take care of everything ADA in Indian Mary?
ADA, yes. However, when you look at what ABA is and all of the recommendations in order to be as accessible as possible, that is something where improvements will never end. This takes care of all the satisfactions that I believe are necessary for the next, 10, 20 years until we get all of the other parks up to speed. We are not going to come back and do more ADA upgrades after this one at Indian Mary Park.
Well, as they keep putting new requirements on for ADA, then ABA, then it'll be ACA, then it'll be AA, and when they get it, there's going to reach a point where you can't meet the requirements. Are we forced to just close the park? You keep putting too much stuff on it, we may just say, sorry, we can't do this anymore.
You'd be talking about shutting down parks all across America, and I do not see that happening. Parks are vital to the well-being of a community on many different levels. The goal here is to become as accessible as possible, and this grant and this project will meet it, so that somebody who has mobility restrictions are not meeting barriers that would restrict them from not being able to camp or not being able to get to the different prime activities at the park. And so I believe that this is the best thing for Indian Mary, so that people of all abilities, as well as their families, friends, everybody can use the park.
Well, it's a
step. We'll meet that with this.
It's a step forward, but never say never. I always thought we would have a secure southern border until about 6 months ago. So anyway.
Can I ask a question,
yes,
Chair?
Absolutely.
Do you have any broadband plans? I think Indian Mary has a really tough cell service area, and that's understandable, and maybe it's a chance to unplug. I went to a wedding event at Morrison's Lodge, and one of my favorite things was nobody had cell service. But Whitehorse Park has a chance to get some, I imagine. There's probably some fiber heading by there. Is that in any part of your plans to provide any internet service?
No, my basic plans at the moment are to redo the showers and restrooms, to redo the current plumbing, the current sewer, and take care of a failing infrastructure before we continue to add modern services. Right. So with all of our parks, we advertise that we have kind of poor cell service. We have no internet, and put your electronics down. It's time to relax and unplug.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably...
That's a personal choice.
That might be an attraction to some people. What? No internet?
Well, and if I could add on, Sarah, for both these projects, White Horse and Indian Mary, if there was any delay due to COVID or any infrastructure improvements or any broadband improvements, those are allowed. And so I would encourage you to apply for any funding gaps you have in these two projects to the ARPA Task Force. Application was available on Monday and is on the front page of the website for everybody. And so you, I think White Horse was delayed by COVID, and so there might be some ways, because then the price goes up. When we have to wait a year longer, everything costs a little bit more. In some cases, a lot more. And so we want to make sure these projects go forward, and that's one way to help it get there.
I appreciate it. I believe I read that you can't match federal funds, and the Land and Water Conservation Fund is federal.
That's true.
However, we do have several other projects in the works. We have a very aggressive plan for increasing our infrastructure, as you see within our approved budget and capital plans, as long as funding, you know, is available. We've had several setbacks, Wolf Creek mainly, so we will absolutely be applying for the ones that qualify.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, item number three, order number, we'll move this to the WBS item number two. Order number 2021-026 in the matter of the Parks Advisory Board, amendment to the bylaws.
All right, so the Parks Advisory Board officially voted that they would like to change the language under Article 4, which is membership, item number one, to reduce the 9-member board to 7 members, which I think is reasonable. 9 is too many members for this board specifically. So reducing it to 7 would hopefully mean that we can have a quorum every time, that more people would be able to consistently attend. And our goal is, of course, to get members that want to be active and be on the board. And so that is a vote and a motion that was completed by the board itself. And then the board did not suggest it, but me as a parks director, I am requesting that there's a second change to the bylaws. That would be under article number 7 for meetings, section 2. The language right now reads, the PAB shall have regular meetings with the frequency, time, and place to be established by the members in accordance with the needs of the Josephine County Parks staff and the PAB. For 5.5 years now, we have been regularly meeting, pretty regularly, monthly, and there are one or two members that are very adamant that we need to meet every single month. But the problem for me is that it's way too frequent. It has become more of a location that we're just meeting to talk about parks. Decisions aren't being made, work isn't being done between meetings, and if you look at the agendas or the minutes, it's a lot of the same stuff being repeated over and over. And so I want to request that I have meetings either quarterly, where we're actually voting on business and getting work done, or if you want us to meet more often, I can agree to every other month. The Parks Advisory Board can meet as often as they want outside of a quorum. And so I don't know if this 100% has to be done in the bylaws, but either way, I'm looking either for you guys can be okay with me meeting less frequently with them, even against their wishes, or to change the bylaws in order to get that in writing.
Well, I know that airport boards put in their language at least to meet at least quarterly, which leaves it open to, if you see something coming up and you need to meet monthly, you can certainly meet monthly. There's nothing.
Well, you got to put language in there and or call of the chair.
And or call of the chair, you know, because you may have something come up that you want to meet every month for a while till you get something put to bed. You need to have the latitude to be able to do that. But, you know, it says at least or at you know, as workload requires or something?
No, I think you just put at least quarterly and or call of the chair. That way, if you have something that needs to get done, the chair just calls a meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd suggest you go ahead and make those changes. Sounds like we're willing, and have Wally look at it, and then we'll still deal with it on the WBS next week.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Anything else, Sarah, while you're here?
I don't think so.
How busy are you? How's it going? Are the parks full?
Yes. Yeah, so last year, if you didn't hear my statistics, in 2020, we saw a 19% increase in paying $5 day visit service and a 24% increase in camping nights. The trend is continuing higher this year. Good. We're slammed. We absolutely can. I can barely keep up with my admin tasks, working 50 to 60 hours a week. We still have 5 openings for the field. We cannot hire enough park aides, and so the guys are not able to tackle projects. They are cutting grass and just trying to keep our doors open. So if anybody is looking for a job, we're paying $15 an hour and can't hire enough park aides.
I'd be interested. I'd be interested in your policy moving forward, but it looks like to me, my pessimistic mind says we're going to go right back into full-blown COVID restrictions and lockdown. I need to know what your plan is going to be for that.
Well, parks stayed open during all of this. The only time that our parks were closed was when we had a mandatory, very short closure on restrooms. And that was because we couldn't provide soap. But at that time, I recommended that we follow CDC instead of Oregon's rules because we were having people urinate and defecate outside of the restrooms, which is worse than just going, we have to go inside the vault toilets. And so we did reopen our restrooms at that time. But other than that, we closed tent camping during the winter because we also closed restroom and showers for just a very short time. We didn't want people going into heated restrooms and hanging out too long. But other than that, we stayed open with our full hookup sites. Our days parks stayed open, and I plan to continue that unless we are told otherwise by the state or CDC, and at that time I come to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Okay, item number D, transit. Scott Chancy, transit program supervisor, is here via Zoom. Item D1 is public transit division ODOT agreement number 35068. Mr. Scott, what do you have?
Good morning, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, perfect. I was hoping to, because this agenda item will take a little bit longer, I was hoping to move 35103 to the first discussion.
Yeah, we could do that. Whichever one.
Okay, perfect.
Suit yourself.
So this is an agreement. I'm sorry. These are payroll tax funds that are collected statewide, and they're discretionary, meaning they're not part of the formula fund for Josephine County. So these funds in specific are used to run our commuter rail route between Grants Pass and Medford. It currently, this is a continuation, but this isn't a continuation, this is an ongoing a grant with ODOT to continue that service. So we provide service between Grants Pass, Rogue River, Gold Hill, and Medford 7 times a day, Monday through Friday. So these funds, if they were not available, we would not be operating the service. That's pretty much it. I threw in some ridership figures for you for comparison. As you can see, they're going down. They are down about 35% of what they were pre-pandemic. And I really don't expect that to change anytime in the near future. So like I said, these funds are good for 2 years. And after the two-year period, we'll apply for these funds again.
Scott, have you dug down to see how much does it cost to transport one individual from Grants Pass to Medford?
Yes. So on this one, there's some weird things you can do with the math if you want. But you're probably talking about $7 to $8 a passenger. And then minus whatever that fare they're being.
$2.
No, well, it's advertised as $2, but there's actually a discount. So if you're reduced fare, then you only pay a dollar. So it's what that average cost that we're, or sorry, the average income they're receiving per passenger. And that doesn't include pass sales or anything like that, because we don't attribute a pass sale to fare collected on the bus, because it's almost impossible to track. So let's say you're net talking about probably $5.70 a passenger is what it's costing the actual department.
So are we ever going to just get like Metro and just say it's free?
My personal opinion is no. I don't think that's there's some agencies that do that. I don't agree with that position for various reasons. I think that the passenger has to have some sort of value in the system or skin in the game, so to speak. Because if they don't, then you run into some interesting scenarios where people are riding just to ride and things like that. And I think it's important for the passenger to actually place value in the system, that it impacts the way that passengers interact with each other, interact with the driver, act, treat the equipment, things like that. So while it's a valid question, my opinion is no, we should never go fareless. But like I said, there's agencies that do. So Corvallis is a good example. They're fare free system wide.
Well, I appreciate your opinion and in total agreement with you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would it do to your picture if you say it's $2, advertised as $2, but most people only pay a dollar? What if you just did away with the dollar discount and said it's $2, you know, because you're heavily subsidized and you're way, way, way short. When people say, oh, you doubled my fare. Well, yeah, we went back to the advertised amount of $2. How would that affect you on a, like, for instance, 331 passengers, I'm looking at daily 40, that'd be $40 a day.
So,
I mean, do you think that your ridership, I'm assuming that a lot of these are people going back and forth to RCC. Of course, they get to ride for nothing, though, don't they?
Yes.
RCC rides for nothing. But you know, I would, you know, if I had a dollar to get to Medford, I'd sure spend $2 to get to Medford.
Well, you're going from nothing to almost nothing.
Yes.
That's what you're doing.
So I just didn't know, you know, it's your program, and you know what the traffic will bear. But I've always had kind of, it's always stuck in my craw how heavily subsidized public transportation is. Okay. And it's subsidized with me going to the pump.
No,
not going to the pump.
It's subsidized by the statewide transient tax. It comes out of your payroll check.
Payroll tax. So I'm still paying in to something that hopefully I will probably never need, you know, because I'm hoping I will be able to drive it, you know, given my age and disposition, that may not last a whole hell of a lot longer. But
age or your disposition?
Yeah, my attitude
bit of both.
Sometimes gets in the way of me being able to drive sanely. But, you know, I just wondered what it is. I think we've had this discussion even when I was on the city council, that you ever thought about raising your rates to try to cover the cost of it. But, you know, maybe that doesn't work. Then it doesn't become public transportation. It becomes a taxi service, and we're not that.
So that's a very interesting series of questions there. First thing, just real quick, RCC, the students, they actually pay a fee to the college to enroll in the PASS program. So they don't, they board for free, although it's not free to them, but
okay.
that's not continuing here. So the quick answer is our fare box revenue covers about, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12% of our overall expense. And large agencies such as let's say New York, MTA, they might recover 50%, 60% on some of their busiest lines, and so there's always going to be a subsidy. So then the question becomes, and it is a larger question, is, you know, is the value well spent, or are these funds well spent, you know, in this endeavor? Now, if we reduce the, or sorry, if we increase the fare on this to $2 system-wide for everybody, one, I'm not sure I can legally do that, because the FTA requires that we do provide discounts for seniors and Medicare recipients. So that's written in. Now, granted, the funding for this is not from the Federal Transit Administration, but the answer to that is, it's a difficult proposition, and I don't know, I've never explored it. Now, the final question is, what do I think this would do to our ridership? Excuse me, I don't think it would do hardly anything. If we raised it and said $2 for everybody, the consensus is $2 for a trip to Medford or from Medford to Grants Pass, and I will point out that more people ride from Medford to Grants Pass than vice versa, but $2 for that trip is extremely inexpensive, and everyone that rides it will say that. And I have a feeling if we went across the board and said, and we could, and said, hey, it's $2, no discount, that's how it is, I have a feeling the impact to our ridership would be minimal. Now, it would be a different story if we're talking in town within the city of Grants Pass. That's a completely different story. But based on the characteristics of this commuter route, who's using it, why they're using it, and where they're going, yeah, I don't think it would do anything to our ridership. But with that said, our fare box recovery ratio is probably about 11% on this route. So what is it really, what is it going to do in terms of our revenue? And is it really going to offset our expenses enough to justify all the other things that go along with fare collection, such as counting in, you know, accounts receivable, processing it, all those things? So those are all considerations in this question.
You've explained it.
Thanks, Scott.
What is the price of diesel done to your system?
So
it's gone up quite a bit in the last 6 months.
Yes, it has. And so the way that public works, and Rob would be better set to explain this, but the way that we buy our fuel or we pay for that fuel, the impact for us isn't immediate. So what's going on today, we'll see that, you know, 6 months from now. The other thing is, we're not paying taxes on that, so there's no state tax on that fuel purchase. So it hasn't really impacted us. The other thing, and this is one of the things I talk about frequently, is fuel diversity. So not all of our vehicles are diesel. So some of them are gas, so some of them are electric. So having that diversity helps buffer you from any increase in your operating expense due to fuel or energy source price changes. So we're not really seeing it at the moment. Talk to me next year. It might be different, because that's where it's going to be amortized over every gallon that we purchase or put into our vehicle.
Are your charging station metered separately, so you know how much that cost is?
Currently they are not. So they're not metered separately. All I have is a consistent monitoring of how much power is actually going into those vehicles. We're moving as fast as we possibly can to get our own separate meter, because once we do that, then there is an energy tax that rebate that we can apply for to offset those costs. So until I know exactly what those numbers are, we're not able to apply for this fund.
Okay.
And you're paying federal road tax though on your gas and diesel. Okay.
But not on electric.
No.
Okay. All right. So that's 35103, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So we'll move that to the weekly business session. Is that soon enough for you?
Yeah, that works. That's next Wednesday.
Okay, then let's go back to item D1, which is agreement number, ODOT agreement number 35068.
ODOT agreement 35068 is also with state payroll tax discretionary. So as you see, I try to get as aggressive as I can to apply for funds outside of the formula funds that comes to Josephine County for anything that I possibly can. So these funds are to continue, these funds are to help finish the transit hub. So this rounds out three different funding sources that we've been awarded to build and complete the transit hub. So these funds, as you see, I don't know why they did this, but they listed, ODOT listed them as miscellaneous equipment and passenger shelters. Obviously, I'm not gonna spend that amount on passenger shelters, but if you look down in the project description, it explains exactly what the funds can be used for, and it's more than just that. So we will use these funds for things that the other funding sources won't pay for, and as well as to finish the project. So as you know, prices have increased. There's been some other things that have been added to the project. There's still the restroom issues. There's some issues with revamping some adjacent parking to make that available to the public, things like that. So I'm hoping to use these funds to add into the total that we have and have enough to complete the pin, to be confident that we have enough to complete the project.
We cannot count the water bibs at
Sarah.
Count the water bibs that are Jimbo public water bibs.
Sarah.
Can you hear us?
I can hear.
She got it.
Okay, back to as you were.
So anyway, these funds will be used to supplement the existing funds that we have to complete the project. So I have an estimation on how much the consultant is saying that this is going to cost. So I just wanted to make sure that I had that amount as well as a buffer or a contingency fund, so to speak, to make sure that this can be completed as designed. And I know that there will be things that come up in the middle of this that I haven't anticipated that we're going to have to pay for.
What did you put aside in contingency?
10% at least. So depending on, I'm confident I have 10%. I actually have more at this point right now from what the consultant originally quoted the project at. So I'm confident that if prices still go up or the cost is estimated to be higher, I still have that 10% buffer. Like I said, I have more than that now, but I just want to make sure that we have enough to continue the complete the project.
When we get this thing all done and we've got all our funding and stuff, is this the last bit of funding we need to do before we actually break ground? Or is
we can actually break ground the minute that as you know, we were approved, the project was approved. So then we came back and we added in public restrooms. And so that's been added to the plan, and that needs to go through the City Planning Commission, and actually it's gonna go through the City Council again. So there's a hearing for that, or a review hearing for that, in I think it's August 18th. And after that point, if the project is approved as submitted, which I have every expectation to expect it to happen, then we can break ground immediately. So if we didn't have these funds, I would be breaking ground the minute that I possibly could and looking for more funds to make sure that I had enough to complete the project. The way I look at it is I would rather have more than enough money and return it back to the Public Transit Division than not have enough money and build something that I felt was incomplete or didn't meet our needs well into the future.
Okay. Questions?
Sounds good.
No, I'm fine. Move it to Wednesday.
Okay. We'll go ahead and move that to Wednesday also. Scott?
There's one piece kind of hanging out here that we need to kind of talk about at some point, sooner rather than later, and that's the discussion of the restroom facilities, because that has an impact on this budget, as well as the plan that we're submitting to the City of Grants.
Well, I think you've given us some tentative figures on that. Are you saying you want to have a for sure number? Yes, then get that to us. That's an element that we need to have in there. And I'm not going to come off of that, all right?
Okay, so I can get you the exact dollar amount, but what I need to know is, do we need to have a larger discussion other than just that dollar amount to say, hey, this is what we're going to go with, because that needs to be part of our plan. And then the City of Grants Pass is also waiting on us essentially to make their purchase.
Well, I'm sure everybody's going to want to see what it looks like. I mean, just say, yeah, we're going to put in a couple restrooms, but I think it's, we need to have some detail on it. What's it going to be? How many square feet is it going to be? Is it going to be ADA? Do we have a baby changing platform in there?
Or is it a Portland loo? That decision still has to come up.
Or a 5 gallon bucket and a bag of lime.
We're not going on a raft. As long as I'm sitting here, because it's way too expensive for what we're getting, but. Let's go ahead and have that discussion. Let's get it done with.
Okay. Give us options.
Yeah, I agree.
We've agreed a long time ago that we have to have some sort of a restroom for our patrons when they ride all the way in from either Medford or from Cave Junction, that they're not going over to the library to use the bathroom or coming here to the courthouse. That just makes good sense. I'm not saying that when the city comes to us and says, well, you got to have a public restroom because we tell you. That's their problem, not our problem. Ours is strictly our ridership. I'm not interested in Joe Blow walking down the street saying I have to provide a public restroom because it's the county. I'm targeting the ridership.
Correct. Okay? It's for our passengers.
Yes.
In our passengers' convenience, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right, let's move on.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Bring it.
Next up. Under other business, board business resolution number 2021-034 in a matter of appointment of Josephine County Rural Planning Commission. There are currently 4 members out of 7 member board appointed to this commission. There have been 3 resignations in the past year. Last year, proving it difficult to maintain a quorum. William Francis is willing to serve on the commission and will be appointed to a 4-year term, said term to expire on 7/29/25.
Says he was on the airport board.
I know. I've known Bill for a long time.
Yeah.
And he was on the Rural Planning Commission before.
Oh, was he before? Okay.
So is there any problem? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2021-034.
I'll make that
motion. Yep, and I'll second.
For discussion?
Nope.
Please call the roll.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
Commissioner Beartrigger?
Yes.
Commissioner
Teal? Yes. Motion carries 3-0.
You'll like him. He's a Navy guy. He came out a Commodore.
Oh, wow.
Is that pretty high up the...
Yeah, that's a ways up the sticks, yeah. with us, we have our risk assessment. Did you want to chime in on anything today?
No, I just popped in. I saw ADA on there, and I apparently missed it, so...
Yeah, it was through the parks deal.
Indian Merrick Park, yeah.
So we had some discussion on that in our... recorded message.
Yeah, no, that's the only reason why I popped
okay.
in.
Okay, all right, sounds good.
Better watch for things I should be in the know on.
Sounds good. Any matters from commissioners?
I just want to bring attention. I've been following some stuff. We're starting to see some compression in wages. So at the higher income and as the lower income comes up, like $15 an hour to work at McDonald's. So now what we're going to start seeing is the higher income's going, now wait a second. You can flip burgers for $15 an hour. I need a raise now, too. So you're going to start seeing the upper end starting to go.
Compression's always something that happens, and I call it water cooler talk because I used to give a guy 50 cents an hour, and I said, that's just between you and me, and within 3 minutes, the rest of the crew's in going, you gave him 50
yep.
cents. You got to give me. And compression's always, it's just a way of life. Yep. It's something that needs to. You're absolutely
right. But this one's artificial because they're artificially bringing up the minimum wage.
Right. Yes,
which yep. means... And they're going to say, well, I get $15 an hour, see, so I'm going to be there. It's like drinking water when you're seasick.
Well, and there's competition for employment. So I just had coffee with Borsma this morning, and they're starting to see that. I mean, these wages are really starting to crank up because we had a labor shortage.
Well, yeah, and so a burger's going to be $12, a cup of coffee's going to be $6.50.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, at the county level, I worry about because... We're locked in at 3%.
Right.
And I've been saying this since I've been a commissioner. It's coming, folks.
Yeah, it will.
It's coming.
Yeah. Anyway, just to let you know the difference in what overhead can be, and I maybe have told you about the crispy bean burritos at Taco Time. in Roseburg, the Taco Time burritos are 98 cents. In Tacoma, Washington, that very same burrito in the same bag is $3.29. And that's strictly because of labor costs, per square foot rental on the building, on the parking lot, and everything else. So it really can affect it.
It's coming.
It is, and it is coming.
It's coming.
With that, any other
I just want to add one thing. In our discussion with the Grants Pass mayor about the vaccine incentive money, I wanted to make sure we included the city of Cave Junction in this discussion.
And I talked to her about that.
Okay. Great idea.
Yeah, because seem to get left out on some things, and that they should be in the room on this
and
one.
And did we get that information from OHA to over to Sarah? Do that as soon as you get done ticking on the board over there.
Yeah, I think that's in the route. And
the mayor...
They've given a handshake agreement that they, and I says, I talked to Aaron about it. I don't know how you appropriate figure. There's so much population there, so much here, whatever. But they've agreed that they were going to give some of that money to Cave Junction. So.
Good.
Oh, City of Grants passed it? Okay, so we've got it covered.
So we got it
covered. Make sure that information goes to...
Outside.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. All right. With that, we're adjourned at 9:51. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you much.